Hello again. Welcome to episode 28 of the 2QB Experience. This is the Marcus Mariota Experience. I am one of your hosts. My name is Greg Smith. I am at Greg Sauce on Twitter. On the other line with me, your other host, Joshua Lake, at Lake2QBs on Twitter. Mr. Lake, how is your evening going?
Hey, it's going all right. Enjoyed a really great weekend of football. I had a three-day weekend because of Veterans Day. Just all around in a good mood to start the week.
Very good, man. Well, you got anything you want to touch on before we dive into Week 10?
Man, Week 10 was a good one. I was glad to have time set aside that I could watch the games because there were so many good ones this week.
What was your favorite of the games you watched yesterday?
Of the ones that I watched, I think it was the Seattle-New England game. Just because the rematch, the way it ended, the fact that it was close and a good game throughout, that really was amazing. But if I had seen more of the Cowboys-Steelers game, that one, the parts that I saw, was also a really good, interesting game.
Do you have any strong takes about how the Pats-Seahawks game ended? You know, the no call on Gronkowski, the call of a fade pattern for the last play of the game. Where do you come down on those two hot topics?
I think I fall where most people do on the interference. I think it was a good no call. Gronk definitely initiated the contact, and then they're both engaged. I don't know. I don't like it when they call those interference. Like, let them play if it's both of them going at it. Just see what happens. The fade to Gronk, yeah, I mean, it's just like the reverse of the Super Bowl, where you got to wonder why didn't they run it? Why didn't they try more? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to get away from your best player, but yeah, second guessing all day is kind of an easy thing to do from this perspective. What about you? What would you have done there?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not an NFL coach, so I don't consider myself like an expert on play calling or anything. It just seems to me that the fade is a pretty risky call every time you call it on the goal line, if only because, you know, sometimes you don't get the pass interference calls. Sometimes the pass isn't quite on point. Sometimes, the guy can't stay in bounds. Like, I don't know. It's just not a play I like very much in the first place. So I don't know if the correct answer is, oh, well, they should have run it with Blunt, or if they should have, you know, had Brady sneak it. But I do appreciate the fact that they did try to go to their best player. Like you said, I think that's something you can't blame them for. But at the same time, like, is there a more effective way you could try to get the ball to Gronkowski, like on a rollout or on a slant or something like that? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just interesting to me. The fade just isn't a play that I like. So that's why it was, you know, it took note for me in that game. I think that, you know, if I were in charge of play calling, I probably would have tried to come up with something else. But again, I'm not a head coach.
Fair enough. No, I liked the – yeah, I'm with you. I don't know what I would call, but I like the refs not calling things in big moments. I wish they called fewer penalties overall.
What if they had called, you know, offsetting pass interference calls on both of them? Do you think that would have made it better or worse?
I mean, to me, that's just worse. You're just giving the offense another try. That doesn't really benefit the defense. I don't like it. I don't like offsetting. Let them play unless it's very clear that one is outdoing the other in terms of interfering.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, especially on the no call in general. I think that was correct for that instance. But speaking of Gronkowski, we got some pretty big news on him today. He is going to miss at least one game with a punctured lung. And we know that this does big things for Martellus Bennett in that offense, and I guess a lot of the other Patriots receivers, to be fair. What does this do for Tom Brady to you, if anything?
I think it does hurt, and especially in a week where they're going to be playing San Francisco, they're going to be favored by two touchdowns. This could be a massive LeGarrette Blount week. Like, they could just brute force it the entire day.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't see the Cardinals running much against the Niners yesterday. I wonder if, you know, we'd see a similar sort of pass-heavy game plan implemented by the Patriots, but I don't know. I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, they still have weapons. Brady will still be throwing. It's not as if they'll go to a 10-pass attempt game or something.
It could be a good game to get Deion Lewis involved, too, kind of let him get his feet wet against a subpar defense.
Yeah, it was – I really want to see Deion Lewis on the field. I loved what I saw last year. I had so much of him in the MFL 10s. And this week was so bizarre, just Belichick's – patently obvious quote, a guy that hasn't played in a year hasn't played in a year. Like, that was his explanation. Thanks for nothing.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of want to see where Lewis is at, if he looks slower, if he has the agility, just kind of get a feel for what kind of talent he has right now.
Yeah, you said I really want to see him on the field now, and I wondered to myself, is it you or your MFL 10s who want to see him on the field? But and then you admitted as much. I like that.
Yep, my MFL 10s, my dynasty leagues. I have so much Deion Lewis across so many formats that I really want to see what happens.
Are there any other guys that, or here's just a general question. How closely do you follow your MFL 10 scoring in season, or is it not something you even look at until the season's over?
I've checked probably twice, maybe three times this season through 10 weeks. It's just not that interesting to me till the end.
Is there anybody else besides Lewis that you're really banking on down the stretch here that you can think of? A guy that you own everywhere?
Lewis is one of the highest guys there. Philip Rivers is another. I mean, he's my top quarterback by a fair bit, and that's been rough just seeing all the injuries they've had. One of the reasons this year particularly, there's no reason to check very frequently, is early on we were missing Tyler Eifert, Tom Brady, Le'Veon Bell, and so we really just kind of knew things were going to shift after a few weeks, and so there's no point in checking early on.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, let's get back to the Week 10 review here. We talked about news with Gronkowski. The other big news today is that Alshon Jeffrey has been suspended 4 games for PED use. We know this does big things for Cameron Meredith, kind of similar to the Gronkowski-Bennett situation in New England. But I want to talk about Jay Cutler. In Week 10, Jay Cutler proved to be who you thought he was, Josh. And we had kind of talked ourselves into him as a streaming candidate on last week's episode and on the QB2 experience where I guested with Jim Saunas last week. But, you know, Cutler completely crapped the bed. And I'm wondering for you, is this Alshon suspension the nail in the coffin?
I feel like this whole week is the nail in the coffin. Cutler's bad performance, Alshon's suspension, Jordan Howard's injury, offensive line injuries. All around, I don't see a reason why you could trust Jay Cutler again this year. And trust was kind of maybe the wrong word this week even. We rolled him out, but I don't know that we would have said he's super trustworthy.
Yeah, so is he a guy that you will actively target with streaming defenses from here on out, like the Giants in week 11?
I think that's an interesting call. We're recording while the Giants are playing, so we'll see how their defense looks. But I don't expect that Bears offense will be very good, and Cutler certainly can have his high turnover games. So, yeah, that's not a bad idea. It hadn't occurred to me. Have you looked much at what the schedule is for opposing defenses coming up?
They have New York and Tennessee and San Francisco in their next three. I'm sure all of which are going to be pretty widely available. Detroit after that also probably going to be wildly available. Green Bay and Washington in the final 2 weeks of the fantasy season. So there's a lot of potential for streamability with that group of defenses. But, you know, everybody else might be hip to this idea and looking to go against Cutler without Jeffrey as well. So if you see other owners jumping on that same bandwagon, you might have to fight a little harder on the waiver wire for these defenses. I think the Giants next week are definitely a good one, especially because they're on the road. Tennessee in week 12, I'd like that streaming pick too. I don't know if I would ever use San Francisco's defense to stream, but maybe in a GPP or something, I could see making that sort of a punt play. What do you think about, you know, bad defenses like this up against a bad offense? Are you still willing to make those streaming calls?
One of the things I've focused on more lately, and you can tell me what you think, you spend a lot more time on rankings and do better at it than I do. I've been looking at the number of sacks and when I have time, just generally the pressure that defenses are getting, because I feel like even a bad defense, if they can pressure the quarterback, can make things happen. But the ones that are averaging 0 to 1 sack per game, that aren't getting pressure on the quarterback, I don't know that I like them even in good matchups, just because a bad defense isn't gonna cause much, isn't gonna cause turnovers if they don't make the quarterback rush and kind of get off his game.
Yeah, I don't think you can always look at just raw sack numbers, if only because that doesn't tell you a whole lot about like the opposing offensive lines that they faced, the opposing quarterbacks they faced. You know, if somebody's played against Oakland and Dallas and, you know, Russell Wilson, you know, or some other similar mobile quarterback, I guess Russell Wilson was a bad example. He hasn't been that mobile this year, but you know what I'm saying? Against good offensive lines, against quarterbacks who are good at evading sacks, then those raw numbers are going to be a little lower. I tend to use Football Outsiders adjusted sack rate. That's something that I include in my game phlebotics spreadsheet every week, 2 QBs. And Yeah, I don't know. It's something that's definitely worth looking at, though. You're right. Pressure on the quarterback tends to lead to, hurried throws, bad throws. And even if you're not always generating interceptions, sometimes you're just, getting the offense off the field, right? And leading to a lower scoring game. That stuff also leads to poor game script sometimes. If the quarterback can't get anything going, things just kind of snowball, get worse and worse to the point where they are forcing throws, and maybe throwing more interceptions, or hanging in the pocket longer and getting sacked. So it's definitely a good metric, and definitely probably Jesus. It's certainly something that should be a part of your defensive analysis, I think.
Yeah, no, that's helpful.
What else did you see in week 10 that caught your eye?
So the thing that jumps to mind is that the Redskins still seem like a pretty viable offense. Obviously, I pay more attention to them than I do a lot of other teams. But I think that offense going against Minnesota and still having a decent day kind of shows that despite the tough schedule coming up, they are going to be interesting. Jamison Crowder remains interesting. Rob Kelly looks like he may actually be on the RB2 list. And so that to me was impressive because I do think Minnesota, while not as good as they looked the first few weeks, is still a pretty good defense.
Yeah. What do you do with the receivers there? I mean, Crowder for a while was actually their most targeted guy, except for maybe, especially among the wide receivers. Is he a guy that you're regarding as like a wide receiver two at this point?
Not quite, no. I think he's still a wide receiver three, but he has that Jarvis Landry style of they're feeding him the ball. He's not doing a ton of explosive things with it, but he's productive in PPR leagues. But I don't think I could say he's a wide receiver two just because there are so many targets in that offense and he doesn't have the explosive potential. But he's an interesting guy. I think he has a very clear role for fantasy teams in PPR leagues.
Yeah, I'm coming around on him, if only because, like you said, the floor is there. He's got the bulk of targets. He's going to get a certain number of catches every game. And they also use him in the red zone, which they've been doing all year. So there's reason to like him. I think he's an interesting guy. And I still think you might be able to trade for him and not pay too much, if only because, he's not the type of name that carries that weight just yet.
Yeah, no, it's true. For some reason, he is not viewed as an attractive, sexy player, whether it's Dynasty or Redraft. So you can get him cheap in a lot of leagues.
Well, speaking of unattractive fantasy players, let's take our weekly temperature of Brock Osweiler.
Oof, that
For,
segue.
14 plus fantasy points, but only 99 yards passing in week 10.
Oh.
WTF, man. What the hell
Oh.
are we supposed to do with Brock Osweiler?
And against Jacksonville, it's not as if he played Denver.
It's brutal. I looked up this stat earlier today, 3.7 yards per attempt, which is easily the worst among starting quarterbacks in week 10, like worse than some guys who came in backup duty even. It's just atrocious how bad he was, and still put up some points thanks to touchdowns. But man, I fear for everyone's DeAndre Hopkins shares. I fear for the Texans. I want no part of Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, the weird thing is the Texans are still winning. They're in such a bad division. And it's the same. I mean, it's kind of the same thing we've said with the Rams, right? Like, you have a bad quarterback, you have to see your offense is bad, but you're also winning games. And so it's tough to bench a guy when you are actually winning these terrible football games.
Well, you set me up for another great segue. Let's talk about Case Keenum. 165 passing yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions in a 9-6 quote unquote victory. I think that, I mean, that's worse than a tie to me. I don't know. Like, Jared Goff is still, nowhere to be found. What the hell is going on with the Rams? Are you making any moves relative to this quarterback core?
I sent out quite a few offers for Jared Goff in Dynasty leagues.
How did that go?
People still have too high an asking price, in my opinion.
Do you mind anonymously sharing some of what you offered versus what you got rebuffed with?
Sure. So, in a league where I'm kind of middle of the pack, maybe I'll make playoffs, maybe I won't, but I'm not real competitive. So the first round pick is probably a mid round first. I offered. At various times, I offered a first and Tyrell Williams, and that was a no.
Damn.
And a first and Colin Kaepernick, and that was a no. And so I thought those were potentially overpaying. I mean, Goff in this very league was the fourth pick overall in the first round of our rookie draft. And so it's like paying a premium on that, despite the fact that he's not doing anything. I really thought that was, I mean, to me, that was as far as I could go.
I mean, I probably would have taken the Tyrell deal. That sounds good. I mean, I guess to be fair, there is probably some concern with Tyrell Williams that maybe when Keenan Allen comes back, when Danny Woodhead comes back, that he won't have the same type of role. But I don't think that Tyrell Williams is necessarily going to go away next season. Do you?
No, not at all. I like him. I'm reluctant to get rid of him. It's just a team where I'm deep at wide receiver and so could afford to give up one of them. And so that's why I kind of threw out a name that I thought was interesting, just to see if I could get a bite that way.
Yeah, the Kaepernick one is interesting too because he's a guy whose value could go up next year, right? If he lands in a situation where he is, the starter on a good team or a better team than the Niners, I could see him potentially returning some value as well. Yeah, I'm surprised that both of those got rejected. That's interesting. But let's be clear, we're not really interested in Keenum or Goff for redraft at all anymore, right?
Oh no,
Would you
not
be
at all.
willing to drop the two of them?
If you were in a league where you actually have owned them, I mean, I guess Osweiler you could have reasonably owned in several leagues. Keenum, I don't know what leagues you are already owning him, but they're probably deep enough that you've got to hold him just while he's a starter.
Yeah, I think that's the only case in which I would really want to hold on to him is if I, didn't have any other backup QBs or I had some bye weeks to still cover. But, if I had, two solid guys and one, I don't know, even if the other guy was Brock Osweiler, I'd feel pretty comfortable dropping Case Keenum at this point. But I do understand that not every roster has that sort of flexibility. Another guy that is probably worth considering dropping at this point is Ryan Fitzpatrick. He kind of got the last minute scratch in favor of Bryce Petty for the Jets in week 10. What should we expect from this team when they return from bye in week 12? I mean, I'm assuming Bryce Petty's going to be the starter. What about you?
Yeah, I think Petty, I think Hackenberg even has a shot at getting in there sometime this year. I don't know why they would go back to Fitzpatrick. I think Todd Bowles is kind of a realized this is a lost season and they're not going to be bringing Fitz back, so they need to look at the other options now.
So you'd probably feel good about dropping Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I think I'd probably be more likely to drop him than Case Keenum, sadly.
Holy cow.
Just because I think one is more likely to start another couple of games.
That's fair, I guess. I mean, I did drop Fitzpatrick in one of my leagues today. My bye weeks are done. I'm looking to just run forward with the two QBs I have. That's a super flex league too, so there's a little added cushion there in case one of my guys does get hurt. But yeah, Fitzpatrick, I don't think is anybody worth owning. What else did you see in week 10? Anything else you come to mind for you?
I think that I would be kind of spoiling our spotlight experience if I talked much about it, but Mariota is something else. We'll get to him. But those were kind of the big games that I was paying attention to during the week.
Okay. I wanted to note one little anomaly here before we get to our boom and our bust of the week. The first is rushing QBs. Three quarterbacks with rushing touchdowns all finish in the top six. That's pending Monday Night Football, of course. Aaron Rodgers, Cam Newton, Colin Kaepernick. Can we all just agree that the Konami code is real and that it can save us?
Yeah, it really is a cheat code. And Rodgers is one that kind of shows us, sure, he's mobile. I'm not trying to dispute that, but he's not a running quarterback. Just having that element, the guys that can still move, does really change things.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even the guys who aren't rushing that much, like we talked about this with Dak Prescott like a week or two ago, he doesn't actually get that many rushing yards, but the fact that he can move around in the pocket and do stuff with his legs, especially in those short, goal line situations, it really is such a huge boost to their fantasy value and real life value. But let's talk a little bit more about Colin Kaepernick. He's the two quarterback boom of the week for us. Pending Monday Night Football, he'll either be QB5, QB6, or QB7. So top 10 week for the second week in a row for Kaepernick. We talked about this a little bit last week where, I threw out the notion that maybe he just needed some time to adjust to Chip Kelly's offense. Do you think that's what we're seeing here? Or do you think that Arizona just didn't quite show up in this game? I mean, Arizona's got a good defense. I don't think anybody was expecting a top 10 week from Kaepernick as or is this just like an outlier performance to you?
Yeah, I mean, this was something else. I'm going to kind of toss it back to you quickly because I didn't see any of this game and you're down in that market. But yeah, certainly not something I saw coming. I was trashing Kaepernick for this week pretty strongly, and so I was far from saying he'd be a top 10 option. But did you get a chance to see much of this game?
I did, and you know, a lot of what I saw against New Orleans repeated itself against Arizona. The fact that he is mobile, the fact that they can design plays where he gets out of the pocket and threatens to run with his legs, if not actually running, it opens up a lot of opportunity for his offense. You know, a lot of those receivers they have are not very good. So if you can put pressure on the defense with Kaepernick's legs, that does, you know, help, you know, those mediocre receiving options kind of play a little bit over their heads. You know what I mean? Another thing that kind of stuck out to me was Kaepernick's continuing lack of accuracy. There were plenty of throws that were there that he just didn't make, and that's going to continue to be a problem. It is, I think, a bit fluky how poorly Arizona performed against the San Francisco defense, to the point where, you know, the game script never got completely out of hand against Kaepernick, and I think that that helps him a lot too. We talked about that a lot last week. I don't know. I'm still skeptical because that's the type of person I am, but I'm definitely willing to buy in, and I think you have to continue to consider using him, especially because, like we talked about last week, the schedule coming up is really nice for Cap.
Mm-hmm. No, it really is, and so I write a QB streaming article every week over at 444 Football, and just spoiler, Colin Kaepernick is going to be on my list of three for this week, and kind of the point I made is it's terrifying. Like, rolling him out as your streaming quarterback in a one quarterback league or as your QB2, just terrifying, because you know it could be a negative score. He gets replaced in the second quarter, and that's within the range of outcomes every single week. But the upside is just so impressive, and he's done it several weeks already. It's hard to say you can't trust him when we now have, what, 3-4 games where he has been trustworthy.
Yeah,
for fantasy, not for the NFL.
Top 16 in every week he's played at quarterback. Like,
wow.
You can't argue with that. I mean, that's the Konami code, right? It's like rushing production, buoying, you know, a little bit of passing upside. The pace definitely helps. That there's a lot to like about Kaepernick, and he gets New England this week, then Miami and Chicago, and then the Jets, Atlanta. None of those matchups are bad. I can't really think of anything else bad to say about him. It's kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, the inaccuracy is still there, but he's been playing through it and being fantasy relevant through that. And like I've said many times before, we have plenty of examples of bad passing quarterbacks that have been fantasy relevant because of the rushing. So
yeah, and the volume, you know, it's like the fact that he is running that many more snaps, and I actually haven't fact checked to see how many snaps they ran relative to like the league average or anything in these past two games. I imagine the New Orleans game, it was probably pretty high. I don't know about Arizona though. That stuff helps. My primary concern with him now is still, in addition to the potential for turnovers, is worry about negative game script. Like in week 11, they get New England at home. If Blunt and Brady and whoever else just take it to that San Francisco defense and score a ton of points early, that could really impact how Kaepernick is forced to play. If they don't get to run the ball as much, if they don't get to run those zone reads as often as they've become accustomed to, we could see him flounder pretty bad. I'm not sure if that's what's going to happen, but we have to be prepared for that possibility.
Yeah, and New England, even though they have not been a great defense this year, are so well coached, and they do such a good job of scheming for their individual opponent, that's also a concern for me, that maybe they have a better read on how to stop Cap than other defenses have.
Yeah, definitely. Let's move on to our bust of the week for two QB leagues, and I'm calling this one a tie between Tom Brady and Matt Ryan. Ryan entering Monday Night Football was QB19, Brady was 20. You know, with Eli and Dalton going tonight, there's a good chance that both those guys bump down one or two spots into that 21 to 22 range. Are you worried about either of these guys moving forward?
No, not at all. I think I would give the edge to Tom Brady as well. Just, I think this is something where it's Brady at home. You think that they're going to plan for this. It's the big rematch against Seattle. I thought that it would look better, but the biggest thing is, who cares? They moved the ball well. It just happened to be a rushing touchdown kind of a week. I'm not worried about it, but to me that was more frustrating and disappointing than Matt Ryan on the road against Philadelphia.
Yep, Philly's a good defense. Seattle's a good defense. That's the biggest takeaway for both of these guys, I think, is that matchups do matter, you know. I mean, in 12-team, two QB leagues, this guy's just still starters. I don't think that you're happy with the performance you got from either of them in Week 10, but I don't think you can, you know, look at what happened and say, and you know, like, you know, say the sky is falling. You know, I think these guys will both be fine going forward.
Right, and just to be clear, you're saying they scored out as starter quality this week. You're not debating whether they're starters going forward.
Yes, yeah, that's a good distinction to make. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our spotlight QB. Let's do it. Marcus Mariota, the Marcus Mariota, as I've heard him referred to. Like,
can we throw goat into more words? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm sure we're going to keep trying. That's one thing I do know, but. Slotted as the QB1 in Week 10. Again, you know, Dalton and Eli Manning can supplant him for that distinction, but he's on a tear. What else can we say? Did you get to watch much of that game, if any?
I saw highlights from it, so not the game flow or anything like that, but enough to see. It was just really impressive what he's been able to do. And so, no, I didn't see enough that I feel comfortable kind of commenting on the whole. But just Mariota himself, the highlights I've seen, the throws he's making, really, really impressive. I mean, some great development from a young quarterback.
Yeah, very efficient. Only 26 pass attempts for about 300 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. Didn't do anything on the ground, only 4 carries for 8 yards. So it was all with his arm, and he did it accurately. That's what's really stood out for this hot streak he's been on. Now, again, the pass defenses he's faced haven't been great. Like, if you go back to Week 5 when this kind of torrid pace began, that was against Miami, 69% completion percentage. I was pausing in case you wanted to say nice.
I missed the opportunity.
That's okay. I don't think anyone really missed it. Week 6, Cleveland, 70.8 completion percentage. Indy in Week 7 was 59.5, right about 60%. In Week 8 against Jacksonville, 81.8% completion.
The same Jacksonville that Brock Osweiler got 99 yards against.
Great point. Just any time we can subtly stick that needle into Osweiler, we got to do it right. San Diego, who we know has a defense that's a little bit better than some of these other teams, still posted a 62.8 completion percentage there, and then 73.1 in Week 10 against Green Bay. Like, he's making good throws, and that's like the big takeaway for me. If we're going to talk about the one thing we noticed from box score scouting his performance recently, for me, it's that accuracy. What are you seeing about Mariota that jumps out to you?
Yeah, the accuracy is huge. It's a thing that you and I are both big fans of. The other thing that stood out to me is the passing yardage that he's getting. The touchdowns are great, but they are something that we always worry about regression. So he's had 2 or more passing touchdowns in each of his last 6 games, which is fantastic. That's been why he's a top 12 quarterback every week. But what I look at is kind of the volume numbers to see if it's something that I think is repeatable. And early on in the season, he was having lots of games right around the 200-yard mark, and it worried me. He might just be a low-volume kind of quarterback. And he's really turned it on, really approaching 300 yards in each of these games but for Week 5. And to me, that's a very good sign that they're feeling comfortable letting him throw it. He's looking deeper because the yardage is something that's a little more consistent week to week, whereas the touchdowns can ebb and flow.
And one thing I wanted to ask you about, Josh, is kind of this dependence that he seems to have on Delanie Walker being active and a part of the offense. Walker isn't always the most targeted guy for the Titans, but he's often, you know, the guy who kind of makes that offense seem to go. Like, the worst performances we saw from Mariota this year, albeit again against some tougher opponents, were with Delanie Walker out of the lineup. And I'm wondering, this is kind of a general 2QB question, does that sort of relationship between a player and a primary receiver, does that give you any more pause about endorsing the quarterback himself? Like, if you knew that Julio Jones was an injury risk, would that make you want to fade Matt Ryan over the balance of the season? And, you know, similarly for Walker and Mariota, does that question make sense?
It does, but I don't know that I agree with the comparison.
Sure. Okay. That's not a good comparison, but I guess let's.
No, I hear your point.
Let's take a finer, you know, angle on this and look just at the Titans and Mariota and Walker. Do we need to worry that if Walker gets hurt again, that, you know, Mariota is going to go back to being like a QB who finishes outside the top 15 instead of one who finishes inside the top 10 every week?
I'm less worried right now. I think that once they jettisoned Andre Johnson and kind of put Rishard Matthews back into a starting role and really emphasized him, got Kendall Wright involved, I think that they are a more dynamic pass offense. It would still hurt very clearly, but the reason I don't love comparisons to the elite wide receiver ones being lost is I do think they still have enough weapons to make the offense go, whereas some of these offenses, like the Bengals losing AJ Green, Falcons losing Julio Jones, things like that really change an offense much more dramatically than I think the Titans would be changed right now. Obviously, it would hurt Mariota, but I don't know that it's quite as bad as it looked early this season.
Fair enough. We've talked about this with Mariota in past episodes, but it does seem like it's still something we should discuss, and that's the idea of trading him based upon this recent hot streak. And you hear all the time that you should, you know, buy low and sell high, but this is about as high as Mariota's ever been. He's still a young player. He might just be this good. Like we said, he's very accurate, which is a good indication that he knows what he's doing as a passer. But, you know, with all that said, he still has a bye week coming up. And in the fantasy playoffs, he faces Denver. He goes at Arrowhead, and then he gets Jacksonville in week 16. Now, the Jacksonville matchup, we're not worried about that. But those first two weeks of the fantasy playoffs with a bye week right before that, is that troublesome to you? Would you look to unload Mariota now when he still has a couple of good, you know, matchups on the schedule that you could sell him for?
It's a rough question because it could really crush you either way. I think I would not do it right now. I want to have him against Indianapolis in another great matchup. But I do think if you can trade him as a QB1 after this week, then I would do it. A bye in week 13 is such a painful thing. And then to get Denver right after it, it's essentially 2 weeks where you get a zero or a very low score. And it just those 2 weeks alone, assume he's a QB1 in the other weeks, that's a pretty big price to pay. So if you could trade him for another QB1 you trust, I do think that I would look at it.
Yeah, or I think in a different light, if you had a couple quarterbacks that you felt good about for the rest of the year, kind of like I was talking about where I dropped Fitzpatrick earlier, if you have two QBs that you like and you also have Mariota and you could trade Mariota for a running back or a wide receiver piece that will improve that position for you, I think you could do that sort of deal too, especially if you can get, you know, full value based upon what Mariota has been doing lately. Because other people trading with you will see, you know, Indy on the schedule and Chicago on the schedule, and they might need those wins right now. And if you could leverage that and, you know, get out from under his poor playoff schedule, that's something that I think is worth exploring.
I think that's a fair point. I do have a question for you that raised. So I tend to build in redundancy early in the seasons and stash a lot of running backs waiting for injuries, just backup running backs that we've talked about before. At this point in the year, if I'm looking like a playoff team, I start just taking on the risk and kind of trading away good backups and saying, you know what, if I have a star injured, I'm probably going to not win the championship anyway. And so I try and trade away good backups to fill kind of like wide receiver 3 slots, RB2 slots, things like that. And just taking on that risk wholeheartedly at this point, if I'm a playoff team, I guess I'm curious what your take on that is, or if you have a reaction.
No, I love that call, and that's something I actually tweeted about before Sunday, was that, you know, this is the time of year where holding guys for depth on your bench, especially like more middling talents, doesn't do you a whole lot of good. Instead, you should embrace the risk or the variance that could hurt other players, you know, like pick up Damian Williams, pick up, you know, Paul Perkins, these running backs who right now don't really have a role, but, you know, if Rashad Jennings gets hurt, if Jay Ajayi gets hurt, like these guys become running backs who are going to have bigger workloads and could swing that fantasy championship for you. And I think you could do that a little. It's harder to do that with wide receiver, but I think that there is, you know, I mean, look at Alshon Jeffrey and Cameron Meredith. There's a good example of it. Like if you might have, you know, once Alshon and Cutler kind of reestablished their connection, said, okay, well now I can cut Cam Meredith. Like, well, one, I hope you didn't do that. But two, if you did, look at you now. Like it's like, well, shit, now Alshon Jeffrey isn't there. And Cameron Meredith is again, the wide receiver one. It's not, you know, based upon who the QB is anymore. It's based upon a suspension, but the value uptick that he got from that is pretty amazing. And you got to be looking to try to find those types of situations, and they won't always be apparent, and it'll look like you're stashing just terrible players on your bench sometimes, but it can really pay off for you in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I like that, and really that's the way that you win, right? Is you find some guy that breaks out of nowhere, whether it's early in the season or late in the season, is those kind of game season changing pickups or stashes. And it's not the, like, it's not the Joe Flacco at QB3 that wins you a league. Like, if you are holding a boring QB3 and you have no bye weeks, I think you're probably doing it wrong in most leagues.
Yeah, and in some cases, you might just be better off handcuffing the QBs that you plan to start, you know?
Right.
Are there any other guys in that vein, maybe, you know, players who you think could see an uptick in production if, like, a key person gets injured?
Huh, that's an interesting one. I've mentioned Derrick Henry before. I continue to think that's a great role if DeMarco Murray, with his heavy workload, goes down. Damian Williams was a good call of, that you mentioned just a second ago. Those are the running backs that leap to mind. I don't think that at wide receiver it's as clear as it is at running back and quarterback. So running backs, with their proneness to injuries, that's kind of a position I do target.
Yeah, a couple other guys for me that I thought of when I sent out that tweet earlier this weekend, Ronnie Hillman, Andre Ellington, Devin Funchess, and Funchess scored this week. But if Kelvin Benjamin gets hurt, there's a wide receiver who slots into a lot more action right away. You know, Hillman and Ellington are just, you know, stashes, and I don't know how much value Hillman really has because that offensive line is trash. But, you know, those are the types of players that you could start to put onto your bench just on the chance that they hit. That's it. We kind of veered off of Mariota. What else do you want to talk about when it comes to him and that offense?
Just that I will admit to being a little too quick to judge early in the season, kind of mocking the exotic smash mouth and just saying this doesn't look like it's going to work. And boy, has it started to work. And you can attribute a lot to Mariota. You can also attribute a ton to DeMarco Murray being a very, very good running back. Like, it's amazing that Chip Kelly just destroyed his value in Philadelphia because he's been so good in two other cities.
You can attribute a lot of it to the schedule too, though, and I don't think that's something that we should lose sight of.
Yeah, just that bad division. Like we said with Houston, you play in a terrible division against terrible opponents. That's six relatively easy games a year.
Yep. He's also faced Miami and Cleveland to this point of the year. We know that, you know, San Diego and Green Bay don't have the greatest pass defenses. Like, these are part of the reason why Mariota is piling up these stats. So, again, the schedule's good for two more games, and then it gets hard after the bye. So, yeah, take that for what you will. I think that he's a very interesting player, and I'm really excited not only to see what he does over the balance of this year, but what he does in the next couple of seasons, because it is starting to look like he might be legit special. He's got that look to him now. Anyway, I don't feel like we have a whole lot more to say about Mariota, and it might just be because we've talked about him too much already on different episodes, but let's move on. Let's get into our preview for week 11, and I want to start off with a relatively simple question, and I'm going to qualify it with some, you know, stats after that. How scared should we be of starting Carson Palmer at Minnesota? He looked pretty pedestrian against San Francisco, tied for second in week 10 attempts. He had 49 pass attempts, but only finished as the QB 17, again, pending Monday Night Football. We've talked a fair amount about our concerns over the age cliff with Palmer, but I really wanted bigger things for him against the Niners.
Yeah, I don't know that you can trust Palmer much. Palmer is right now coming into the Monday night game, QB 19 in points per game, hasn't looked strong with the exception of a couple of weeks. I don't know that you can trust him. And then when you have a tough matchup, it makes it even less desirable. It's hard to say that you're going away from him just without knowing what your team looks like. But I certainly, your question was how scared should we be? I would say very.
Yeah. I mean, we looked at Stafford as a guy who you might want to bench against Minnesota 2 weeks ago. He was okay thanks to a fluky touchdown in overtime. We talked about how Kirk Cousins might still be a guy you want to use even though he's facing Minnesota. That worked out okay. I think he had about 18 fantasy points in week 10.
Yeah, high QB2.
Yeah, is Palmer in that same discussion for you with Cousins and Stafford now? Or would you, I mean, just as a fantasy commodity, do you think that he still deserves that sort of credit?
I honestly think he's less reliable than those two are right now. Like, does he have the same or higher upside? Absolutely. But I don't know that I trust him even to the same degree I do Cousins. And I probably inflate Cousins more than some would. But I think that offense I trust to throw the ball with good volume and efficiency. And I don't know that we can say for sure what the Cardinals are going to look like week to week, especially in tough matchups.
Well, and you can look at the way that their team is set up, at the situation that each of those QBs is in, and kind of see why Palmer wouldn't have to throw as much or why they wouldn't need him to be as good as a fantasy passer. I mean, the Cardinals have debatably the best running back in the NFL. They have a very good defense. If they can lean on those two things and let Palmer be an actual game manager, then that hurts his fantasy stock. Whereas with Washington and Detroit, those two quarterbacks don't really have a running game. They don't have good defenses at their disposals to keep games close. Like, those guys are forced to throw. And, you know, that situation, those volumes for those guys is what sets them apart for me. And I, like you, I think you have to like them more than Palmer at this point. It's kind of strange.
Yeah, the rushing game is a solid point, just because when we know there's a bad running game, we know what the offense is going to look like. Yeah, I think it was before we started recording, you and I were saying that about the Giants coming into tonight's game, that they are interesting in good matchups because, you know, they just don't have a great run game. And so there's going to be volume and they can probably exploit a bad pass defense. And so you're totally right. That really does play a big factor if you know which direction the offense is going to go.
Yeah, that game script is so important. Now, I asked how scared you were of Palmer at Minnesota. How scared are you of Jameis Winston at Arrowhead against the Chiefs?
Probably less so, but I will say I've been curious for a while and haven't run the numbers myself just to see the impact that Arrowhead has. I don't know that it's as strong this year as it has been in past years. I don't think that defense is quite as elite as it has been. And I do think that Winston has kind of found a way, one way or another, to put up points. I'm not loving it, but I also am not terrified of this matchup.
I don't think they've lost there. The Chiefs, I don't think, have lost in Arrowhead this year. Kansas City's defense, yeah, you're right, though, is not quite as good as it used to be. They are, at 7-2 now, but it's more of a balanced team. Like, their offense is doing some good things. Spencer Ware has been a revelation, right? They don't lean quite as hard on that defense as they used to. Pass defense does rank 8th by DVOA. Their pass rush is only 20th in the NFL by adjusted sack rate. So I don't know. I think Jameis could be okay. We've seen a number of teams pass on them fairly well. In the past 3 weeks, they've given up the QB 11, QB 14, and QB 2 finish. That was weeks 9 and back. I guess in week 10, Cam finished in the top 10 as well. So they're not as good as they used to be. Now, I think some of those opponents were tough.
But at the same time, just with that, I will say Winston himself he's QB 12 in points per game right now. Like, he has really shifted into, he's had 4 straight weeks since the bye with more than 20 fantasy points. I don't think he is an easy out. It's not a great offense. He's not a great quarterback, but I think he's finding ways to become productive.
Yeah, so the opponents that they faced in that stretch, week 7 was New Orleans, Drew Brees. Week 8 was Indianapolis, Andrew Luck. Week 9 was Bortles, who, you know, the ever-present enigma of Blake friggin' Bortles. But, yeah, I don't think that Jameis is on the level of those guys. He might be on the level of Bortles, but that just goes to show you that if he can get into that sort of a game, then maybe he can be fine and still return top 20 value. I'm with you. I don't think I'm terrified of him in that matchup, but I am a little worried.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's not a good matchup. No one's going to say this is great, start your players, but I think it's not something I'm terrified about. I certainly would be starting Jameis in almost all circumstances of 2 quarterback leagues.
Fair enough. What else are you looking forward to next week or beyond?
I am really fascinated to see what Dallas does. Just now that it is official, Tony Romo is healthy and will be backing up Dak Prescott. I think that adds another kind of psychological aspect to Dak's kind of trial by fire this year. Of now, he knows if he does not perform well, he's going to get yanked, and this whole Cinderella season could come to an end very quickly. And seeing how he handles that is going to be interesting to me, because he's been so impressive in all kind of in every way this season. He's taken what's been thrown at him, and he's exceeded expectations. And so now, just to see him with another sort of strain, I'm really curious to see how he looks.
Yeah, this is somebody who I wanted to talk about as well. I think it's interesting that Baltimore, his week 11 opponent, is probably the best defense he's faced aside from Philadelphia. And the Eagles took the Cowboys to overtime in week 8. So we know that, you know, that was one of the tougher matchups Dak has had to play. Although I guess, you know, yesterday against Pittsburgh was also a very tough game. You know, the Steelers came to play and the Cowboys, you know, pulled it out. But what is the impact of that scheduling do for you? Like, are you worried now that he's facing Baltimore? Does it matter to you that Dallas is at home in this game? Do you have more concern about Dak based upon the matchup?
No, I don't. I think you're right that Baltimore's on the tough end of their matchups. Where really, I think it's okay, though. This and Washington, I think both are decent defenses, better than people expected coming into the season. But then if he remains the starter, he then goes on the road to Minnesota and New York in weeks 13 and 14. That's a really concerning stretch to me. I think Baltimore will be interesting. It's a good test, but it's not terrifying. Kind of like what we were saying with Winston. Like, I'll still roll Dak out there. I still think he's a good play, but I do think it's a challenge. I think it gets really, really interesting around weeks 13 and 14, right before your fantasy playoffs. That's the stretch that could really make or break teams that have been riding Dak.
Yeah, but once he's in, like you said, New York in week 14, but then Tampa Bay and Detroit in weeks 15 and 16. So if you can make it that far, Dak's definitely a dude you want on your roster, that's for sure.
Well, and that's the big concern, right? Like, those two tough road games, one being a division game, that's the stretch where I think it's most concerning that he could, if he's going to be benched for Romo, I think it's sometime in these next few weeks before you hit your fantasy playoffs. Maybe he doesn't, but there is that risk that some quarterbacks don't have.
Yeah, definitely. Let's look at the other quarterback in that matchup, Joe Flacco. He started to find some positive touchdown regression. Talked about that a little bit on the QB2 podcast last week, referencing a stat from J.J. Zacharyson of, you know, Number Fire and Living the Stream fame. He had a good stat about, you know, based upon the number of passing yardage Joe Flacco has, he should have a lot more passing touchdowns at this point in the season. And we saw him, you know, put those up against the Browns. Now, that's the Browns. Will it continue against Dallas?
I want to say yes. I think he's an interesting play. It's a worse matchup, but I do think for the reasons you've talked about, I think he is still interesting. There's still something there. Probably not the same as that Thursday night game against Cleveland, but I will note, because they played Thursday, there is the extra long week, and so there is more time to prepare. I think he's still a fine play, but as a low QB2, don't expect huge things.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I am still of the belief that Flacco is a pretty average player, and that most of the reason he looked good in that game was because he was playing Cleveland. You know, I'm not ready, based upon that one game, to say, oh, now Flacco's back to being a good QB, we can consider him like a low-end or a high-end QB2. Like, I'm not even close to that sort of an evaluation. With that said, you know, the TD regression could continue. I just don't know if he's the type of quarterback who, on top of that, will give you the other, like, peripheral stats to bump him into, you know, a top 10 consideration. I think if you're expecting between, like, a QB 18 and a QB 14 finish, that's fair. But to expect more than that, I think you're probably kidding yourself with Flacco. I mean, I kind of hope I'm wrong, because I'd like to see him put it together at some point and start to make those receivers interesting. But I don't know. I have tempered expectations, just because that's how I've regarded Joe Flacco for so long. I don't see any reason, like, based upon one good game against a bad team, to change my evaluation.
Yeah, I think that's right.
What do we want to talk about next? Let's look at our buddy Blake Bortles. You know, he continues to post top 20 weeks. Tough matchups, too. What can we expect against, you know, the best possible matchup, Detroit in week 11? I mean, is Blake Bortles like a top 10 QB for you this week?
I think he's probably pushing it. Like, it's kind of insane, because he's a terrible quarterback and has just regressed so badly in terms of his play. But fantastic matchup. It's likely that it'll be a high-scoring game. You think that Detroit will probably be able to move the ball fairly effectively. I don't know that he's top 10, but I think he's probably in the top 15 for my rankings if I was putting them together weekly like you are. I don't know if you've started to take a look at week 11. What are you doing with him?
I haven't. I kind of wanted to see what happened with the Monday night game. Not that that would impact Bortles' ranking too much, but he'll probably be in my top 12 and probably in my top 10. It's kind of hard to say off the top of my head, because I can't remember who's on bye in week 11, but the matchup is just so good. You can't ignore that. Just like we saw with Flacco in Cleveland, I think you could see a similar sort of performance from Bortles in Detroit. Like, for all his failings, Bortles should be able to do something against that defense. Now, that doesn't always happen. You know, we've seen Detroit hold some QBs to reasonable fantasy finishes, but we've also seen them give up some pretty nasty ones too, you know, like really big games. I think that he's a guy you have to use if you have him this week, unless your other options are just insane. But I don't know. I this is more just kind of a discussion on Blake Bortles and what he means to you as a fantasy quarterback. And just the fact that we're looking at a matchup against Detroit and saying, like, oh, I don't know, like, can we rank him that high? Like, that's pretty telling, I think, about what kind of passer he is altogether.
Right. And we've hit the point where the team's leadership is having to come out and say, no, we're not benching Bortles for Chad Henne. That's that's not a good point in the franchise history.
That's so sad.
I think you've got to keep rolling him out there because of what he's been doing, but it's really painful to watch. It's one of those things where if Bortles is one of your quarterbacks, you probably aren't checking Stat Tracker during your Sunday. You're just wanting to look at the end.
Yep, wait till the end. Last thing I wanted to bring up for week 11, and this is not quarterback-centric, but I think it's an important story to kind of tune in on, and this is Thomas Rawls likely to return to the Seattle backfield. And I'm curious as to your thoughts on how we should deal with, you know, the three-headed monster of Rawls, Kristen Michael, and CJ Procise, who is coming on pretty strong in the past couple weeks. I really hope this doesn't turn into just a big mess of a committee, but I think there's a good possibility that's the place we're headed. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's pretty decent odds of that. It's a little bit of paint by numbers, but I do think that it's likely that Procise has a pretty clear role now. I think he's the best pass catcher, and he kind of has that third down pass catching, interesting PPR role. Where I'm less clear is what Rawls and Michael are going to do, just because I don't know how quickly they're going to be able to work Rawls in. But Michael has really faded in his appeal as the season has gone on. So I do think there's a chance that Rawls could become a pretty reliable RB2 if things break his way, but I don't know that I'm confident enough to just go pay good prices for him.
Yeah, I think best case scenario, this turns into like a Jeremy Hill, Giovanni Bernard split between Rawls and Procise. Worst case scenario is we get like another Giants backfield situation where all three running backs are being used kind of interchangeably and none of them really holds a lot of value. I'm generally skeptical of any player coming back from an injury, especially if they've been out for a long time. Like, not to quote Bill Belichick about Deion Lewis, but Rawls hasn't played for many, many games. And even if he is returning right now, I don't think you can consider him someone you'd start until you see production on the field. I think that he's worth a speculative ad, but he's not a guy that I'm jumping to get into my lineup just because last year he was good. Like, we're too far removed from that at this point. I think that Procise, like you said, is the guy worth starting right now and probably should continue to have some role. I'm just hoping that it's more of a Gio Bernard role than a like a Chris Thompson role. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And like you said, Rawls was good last year, but was an undrafted free agent. We don't have this just all the dominoes lining up to say he's going to come back in and be the top running back. Like, he might, but it's not as clear as if a highly drafted kind of draft capital running back that's also looked good was injured and comes back. Like, it is certainly within the realm of possibility Kristen Michael keeps the job. I don't think so, but like you said, it could be just a muddled mess for a few weeks at least.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else you got for the upcoming slate of games or just anything else you want to touch on, Josh?
No, I think the thing that's coming to mind is we're getting close to the point of probably having a dynasty episode at some point, talking about what you do with your teams, how you start preparing for the offseason. But it's tough to do because we're also ramping up for redraft playoffs. So tough to balance all of that. But dynasty brings its own sort of seasons with it, where even if you're losing, there's a lot of things to be doing.
Yeah, definitely. I've started to butt up against that a little bit, to where my one dynasty team is done. And I have a lot of draft picks from a trade I made earlier with Alshon Jeffrey involved. I got to start thinking about, do I hold those draft picks for now? Do I try to sell them in season and pick up some, you know, maybe undervalued guys or injured guys. And those are the types of decisions that I haven't had to make very much as a dynasty owner because I've only been doing it for a couple of years. It's very complicated, though, at least from the outside looking in or from a new person's perspective in the format. We should have that episode, though. I think that's a great call. We also may have another special episode in the works here. I don't know if you do you want to tease that at all, Josh? Do we want to hint at it a little bit or should we wait for a little bit more confirmation here?
I think we should just leave the suspense.
Okay.
Keep the listeners wanting more.
And you may even get a bonus episode. So 2 in 1 week perhaps would be pretty incredible. And incredible is probably not the right word. It's not that exciting, but it's just a podcast.
We're bringing Dak Prescott on. Yeah.
We've got Dak as a guest. No. It's that point of the year. And I also think that like interest in certain, you know, types of players is starting to wane. And I think that that's something that I'm not saying you need to run out and capitalize on that, but two, you need to be cognizant of that as well. Like certain people aren't going to set their lineups. Certain people aren't going to respond to trade offers because their team is out of it and they've stopped caring. And while I think that that's, you know, shameworthy and sad, it's kind of a reality of the fantasy game. So keep that in mind too over the next couple of weeks. Maybe change how you approach lineup and league decisions, especially waivers too. Like early in the year, you might, like if you have top or lowest waiver priority, you might not even consider putting in a bid for, you know, the guy who you know is going to be the top claim. But this time of year, you never know. Like you could have a really bad waiver claim priority and still get the guy you want because no one else is paying attention.
Yeah, no, it's very true.
With that said, let's wrap it up here. We're not going to give you the whole spiel at the outro here. We've kind of decided, Josh and I, that you know this stuff already. If you're listening to the podcast, you know where to find us. 2QBs.com. That's the one plug I'll give. Then I will also say to rate and review the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever else. That's how you can support the show the best way. Come visit the site, help us out with those reviews. Otherwise, you know, we're pretty easy to find, and we're definitely open to conversations, whether that's Twitter, email, what have you. We love talking about this stuff. That's why we do it every week. We know that you love it, and you know, engaging with you guys is not only helpful to you, it's helpful to us because we find out, you know, what the listeners are thinking about. And it can be good to get a fresh perspective on, you know, league situations, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
All right. So here I go rambling again. I tried to cut that stuff out and I still ended up talking for a good, you know, 10 to 30 seconds. I have no perception of how long that took, but we're signing off. We'll catch you next time and good luck in week 11. Adios.